So good morning, everybody. This is session 504, More Than Just Passing Acquaintances, DACS and Companion Standards. Can everybody hear okay? Yeah. There you go. We'll try to remember to talk into the microphone because some of these rooms have some acoustics problems. My name is Bill Landis. I work in manuscripts and archives at Yale University. And I just want to do a quick introduction, and then I'm going to get out of the way and let our panelists talk. We proposed this as an hour and a half session, but we got squeezed into an hour, so I want to thank them profusely for being able to deal with that gift from the program committee. So, the Canadian U.S. Task Force on Archival Description, or CUSTARD Project, when it ended and the U.S. contingent went off and sifted through everything that had happened and, basically came up with DACS, a conscious decision was made to leave off most item-level description, to set that outside of DACS, and to make DACS a standard that was really geared toward the kind of description of accumulations of materials that archivists typically do. With the hope first with the explicit recognition, because there is an appendix in the back of DACS that lists lots of companion standards, but with the hope that those companion standards, that those communities of description of different kinds of formats and things that we typically care about at the item level would create and maintain standards for item level description that could be used in companionship with DACS when people are doing multi-level descriptions and they actually get down to the item level. One of the challenges here is that most of the standards that are listed here were created before 1994. 1994 for archivists is a seminal year because that's the year that ISADG, the General International Standard Archival Description, was published. So that's the first time that there was an archival standard that is parallel to the International Standard Bibliographic Description. For those of you who know MARC and AACR2, you know all about that. But 1994 was a really seminal year. And what's happening now is that in a lot of communities, in a lot of format communities, there's work to take those pre-1994 item-level standards and bring them up to date, make them cognizant of DACS and archival description, as well as standards that'll continue to work for people who want to describe single-item materials in a sort of bibliographic framework that you can get following ISBD. So we're going to have reports from three different communities today, and I'm going to introduce the speakers in the order that they'll talk, and then we'll sort of just get going, and hopefully we'll end up with 10 or 15 minutes at the end for questions. So the first speaker is Diane Ducharme. Diane is an archivist at the Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library at Yale University, and she is a member of the Descriptive Cataloging of Rare Materials, Single Item Manuscripts, or DCRM-MSS, working group of the Bibliographic Standards Committee of Rare Book and Manuscript Section of ACRL and ALA. That's a mouthful.
Five lines out of my introduction.
And so she's going to be reporting on ongoing work on that standard. And one of the things that I think is worth mentioning, and I'm not sure if she was going to, so I'll do it really quickly, but, you know, the standard that preceded DACS for archivists was APPM, and as one of the members of Diane's committee characterized it, DACS basically is APP, and it left off the M. Because it doesn't have rules for dealing with single item manuscripts. So Diane's going to talk about sort of putting the M back in that whole suite of materials. The second speaker is Marcy Flynn. Marcy's a consultant, and she works on standards development within the Association for Image and Information Management. And she's the liaison to the DCRM group for graphics. Those of you who have done any kind of graphics materials cataloging and used the BETS graphic materials standard that's out of LC and was created in the 80s sometime, I think. This is sort of bringing graphic materials sort of up to date for the 21st century. So Diane will be talking about that. Those are two standards processes that are underway. Our last speaker, Andrea Lee, who is the Moving Image Processing Unit Head at the Library of Congress Moving Image Broadcasting and Recorded Sound Division out in Culpeper, Virginia, is going to be reporting on some really nascent work that is just starting to move along within the recorded sound and moving image communities to take two older standards that some people used and some people didn't, basically, but to really sort of weave them into DAX and come up with some standards that can help people who are really focused on item-level description of recorded sound and moving image materials figure out how to knit the kind of item-level description standards that they need in with DAX. So without further ado, our speakers. It's very dangerous up here. If somebody just drops off, there's about a, I don't know, it's like a 10-foot drop off, it looks like.
Okay, well, hopefully that won't happen. Can you all hear me? Hi, I'm Diane Ducharme. Thank you very much for that, Bill, for that introduction, and also for taking out a lot of the acronyms and abbreviations I was going to cover in the first four lines. Since I think it's always better to be explicit rather than elegant at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, which is I'm going to talk a little bit about the background of the DCRM MSS committee and what the DCRM suite of materials cataloging standards is envisaged to be. I'm going to tell you something about our charge and about what my committee sees as some of the unique challenges and opportunities involved in creating a standard for single item manuscripts within a suite of cataloging standards that has always been focused on the bibliographic level of description. And then I'm going to talk about, as an example, one small decision point, one, in fact, character that has turned out to be a very useful point for exploring the tensions between the archival and bibliographic approaches to description and how we might bridge the bracket gap. DCRM MSS is, as Bill said, convened by the Bibliographic Standards Committee of the Rare Book and Manuscript section of ACRL-ALA. We were, I believe, the fourth such editorial team to be formed. DCRMB, DCRM Books, has already appeared. DCRM Serials is just appearing now, is just out. There are also teams that will be covering rare materials in non-book formats, including graphics, about which we'll hear, maps, and music. After the adoption of DAX by SAA in 2004, it became very clear that many catalogers felt that it was indeed APP without the M. They perceived a need for more guidance in the description, item-level description of single manuscripts. Now, it's perfectly possible to write an item-level description of a single manuscript in DAX. In fact, I, with a colleague of mine, actually have created a DAX workshop to that effect. But it is also true that DAX deliberately did not provide much guidance on how to do so, nor does it provide examples, as APPM had done. Nor is DAX particularly easy for a rare book cataloger, say, to pick up and apply just in the course of perhaps having to catalog an occasional stray letter or diary. After some discussion between members of the rare books and archival communities, the DCRM MSS committee was formally appointed in 2007. And if we take a look at the charge, you can begin to see some of the opportunities and possible pitfalls. To develop rules and guidelines for item-level description and cataloging of modern post-1600 manuscript material. These rules, and here's where the abbreviations start coming in thick again, may be adapted from AMRAM, APPM, AACR2, and or DAX, and are to provide specific technical guidance for preparing full Mark 21 descriptions. They are to be self-sufficient as far as possible, and they will follow the principles of DCRM as codified in DCRMB. That's a lot, and that's a lot that's specifically focused on inside a mindset that is saying, okay, we have a standard, we have this, you can work with this, and this, in fact, is what we've been doing. But the BSC also recognized that there were going to be some particular challenges to this. What they are hoping we will create, the lucky seven of us who are working on this, is a standard that bridges the ISBD, International Standard Bibliographic Description, framework of DCRM, and the ISADG, General International Standard Archival Description Framework of DAX. That turns out to take some real bridging, as you may imagine. You know, just before we started in on our work, a rare book cataloger who had already been through working with DCRMB sat down and said to us jokingly that what we were going to do really didn't have to be so difficult. After all, you're really not going to be using Area 2 much, are you? Well, no, not a lot. And you don't really have series, so you're just going to say Area 6 doesn't apply. Probably. And a lot of Area 4 won't apply either, the publication, distribution. See, all you really have to do is take out the parts you don't need. Well, he was joking, of course, but it didn't really turn out to be that simple. What also makes it interesting is what the working group is hoping to do, to endeavor to make the rules acceptable to as wide a constituency as possible without unduly sacrificing internal coherence or consistency. I like the unduly a lot. It brings in the recognition that creating a standard like this is going to be a balancing act. Heaven knows the possible constituency for this rule is potentially very wide, spanning from the archivist who needs occasionally to create a more detailed description of several items within a large collection, and the rare book cataloger who also occasionally catalogs letters, diaries, or other single manuscript items that cross his desk. So what will it really mean to be a standard that bridges two international description standards? And would such a creation, whatever it might be, appeal to a wide constituency, which we're hoping, or no constituency at all, which is sometimes exactly what we fear? To talk about some of the difficulties and the challenges involved in creating this, and I might say, if you weren't at Description yesterday, we are hoping to have a draft of Area 1 to present to the BSC in January for what we hope will be comment and some of the what will certainly be comment. And one of the reasons we're presenting the first area is to give them a further view of what our thinking thought process is and whether or not this goes along with their thought processes. Take as only one example of this, the humble square bracket, which dominates Area 1, it sometimes seems, and which immediately caused us to begin to rethink. Well, the use of the square bracket for supplied information within a transcription area was an AACR2 feature. DCRMB adopted what it called a more rigorous approach. And I quote, "DCRMB gives expanded guidance and provides a more rigorous and consistent approach to transcription than that of DCRB, and incorporates a sharp distinction between information transcribed from the source and information that has been supplied by the cataloger. Transcribed information is never to be placed within square brackets unless the letter or character is unclear. Conversely, the presence of square brackets in those areas of the description that require transcription immediately and unambiguously identifies text as supplied or interpolated." DCRMB, in other words, in the title area and in other transcription areas, is all about the bracket. The hope and focus behind the approach here is that the user will be able to tell at a glance what precisely was in the original title and what the cataloger has supplied. If the cataloger has supplied the whole title is in square brackets. Well, in the years in which the rare book community was going in the direction of more rigorous transcription rules than AACR2 had had, the manuscript community was heading cheerfully in the other direction. While APPM did include title transcription rules, it acknowledged the fact that manuscripts seldom have titles proper by eliminating the need to bracket supplied title from manuscript. DAX, in a further step, did away with square brackets entirely. And if you were around when DAX came out, you remember that this was a very strong discussion point. The assumption is that information in an archival description has been supplied by the archivist and that any necessary information can be handled, explanation of that can be handled in a note. So here we have, in the midst of Area 1, a complete impasse. One community over the years has become even more strongly in favor of a transcription standard with square bracketing. One community has eliminated even the vestigial square brackets found in APPM, which had itself eliminated many in AACR2. How did this happen, and where do you take it from here? How is a bridging committee to bridge this difference? How do you build a bridge from no bracket to bracket? Well, one thing we did was realize immediately that we were going to have to think harder and look more closely at the purpose behind the transcription rules in DCRMB. Among them, addressed, of course, in the introduction to the DCRMB text, are, quote, the reader's need to draw fine distinctions among variants within manifestations and needing to distinguish between copies at the item level. Users must be able to perform most identification and selection tasks without direct access to the material. They frequently perform these under circumstances that require the bibliographic description to stand as a detailed surrogate for the material. The transcription rules make sense once you fully understand that what they are essential for is comparison of book to book, volume to volume, and distance identification to enable rare book librarians and owners to determine what exactly the item in hand might be by comparing their title page with the detailed surrogate that is the DCRMB record. The same needs, however, do not apply in almost all cases to single item manuscripts, even manuscripts with formal titles, which we would estimate are fewer than 10% of the total that ever cross a manuscript cataloger's desk. Printed books are almost never, except by historical accident, unique. Manuscripts almost always are. And of course, there are exceptions. There are multiple copies of literary text and the like. Anyone who has dealt with single manuscripts knows that it is a lovely and lucky day when you get something with an accurate manuscript title page. Usually there's no title. The title is misleading or seriously incomplete. There are almost no circumstances in which a catalog record for a manuscript item could be employed as a surrogate for that item. It will not provide you with the information you are looking for as a reader or researcher. So our discussions evolved from the understanding that we were looking at an area which was treated as transcription in DCRMB for very, very valid reasons for printed material, but does not seem to us to have quite the same validity as a transcription area for manuscript material. A couple of notes that we made. The issue relates to the discussion in transcription and normalization and the discussion on dates. How do we balance access, faithful representation of text, and accuracy? Does the nature of manuscripts justify changing for DCRM MSS the DCRMB rules on square brackets, transcription, and normalization? We are leaning toward yes. I'll spare you the suspense. I probably wouldn't have gotten this far in the presentation only to tell you no, we're keeping the transcription rules exactly as is. It is one example of how these rules have to work for both communities. The rare book community will have to be satisfied that there is an attempt to faithfully adhere to the standards laid down in DCRM for rare materials. The archival community will have to see that we are not simply importing wholesale the rules applied in the original DCRMB and attempting to apply them to materials that are very different and that are cataloged for a different purpose and for a different tradition. Basically, that's where we're standing at this point. I want very much, this is the most important slide, This is the only slide you have to pay attention to. And it's the URL. This is the URL for the wiki for the DCRM MSS working group. It is open read-only at this point. We would love to have as many people look and comment as possible, particularly on Area 1, because we're going to be working again next month for 3 days to try to shape that area up so that we can get a text to the BSC by November. Please read, send comments to any of the members. I will leave that. We're all there on the wiki with our emails. Margaret Nichols of Cornell is the chair. And send email if the spirit moves you and you desire to contribute even more heavily. I'll bet you anything if you send an email to Margaret and you want write access, you'll get it. Thank you very much, and I think I will pass it on. I'll take mine down. There you go.
Okay.
I'm
morning.
Sorry, it's my Vista.
I took the idea from this session's title, Wordplay, using companions and acquaintances, to come up with the title of my presentation about descriptive cataloging of rare materials graphics, also known as DCRMG, or just plain G, a new standard being prepared as part of the DCRM suite of data content standards that also includes rare books, manuscripts, music, serials, and maps. G is a revision of graphic materials, rules for describing original items and historical collections, also known as GM, or the Yellow Book. Since both DACS and G are undergoing revision at the same time, it makes sense to establish a healthy working relationship between them. In an attempt to add interest to this topic for an 8 a.m. session, Saturday morning no less, I decided to use the metaphor of sweet talk and personal relationships in the pictures on the PowerPoint slides I'm going to use. Apologies in advance, there's not a whole lot of diversity that's going to be shown here. From a standards perspective, we regularly discuss the importance of cooperation and collaboration, being true companions, not just passing acquaintances, vaguely familiar with one another. We want to establish and maintain good relationships, but can it be more than just talk? Is it country courtship, like this image from Harper's Weekly illustrates, or a deeper relationship being developed? Practical considerations and common sense based on where you stand in the categories listed on this slide are deciding factors in picking a standard to follow if you have image holdings. Images are found in archives, libraries, and museums, with library and archives mostly having text-based materials and museums mostly containing objects. There's a relationship between the type of organization you're in and the standards that you use. This involves a more rigorous selection process than what's depicted in this Charles Dana Gibson drawing, Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. But still, catalogers grapple with choices in committing to adopt data content standards, generally based upon what seems to communicate most intuitively to users and stakeholders. Usually, archives that mostly contain unpublished text-based collections, some images, choose DACS. Libraries that mostly have published books with some images choose AACR2. Museums with cultural objects, especially art, and including images, choose Cataloging Cultural Objects, or CCO. And organizations that mostly have published and unpublished images choose GM. Two quick examples. If your organization already uses DACS and finding aids for the bulk of description, you'll probably dip into a tool like G for special projects. On the other hand, if you describe images every day and need to integrate access with published resources like books and maps, you'll most likely want to get to know G. Regardless of the type of organization, the type of organization you are, image users rely strongly on the words provided in catalogs and finding aids because the images commonly have no other associated language. This makes description even more critical to successful access and retrieval. Most holdings of visual materials contain a combination of published and unpublished images. Conventions are most easily adapted from the bibliographic tradition to describe published images like postcards, posters, political prints, and stereographs, while archival description is generally a better fit for unpublished images, especially groups of them. Unpublished materials typically constitute the bulk of visual materials holdings in most archives. Bibliographic rules generally apply better to item-level description, while archival rules usually have more relevance to the description of groups or collections. Bibliographic description can be more useful for communicating information about manifestations of a work, so often you find multiple copies of images, especially published ones, while archival description can be more applicable to unique bodies of material. So you can see why it isn't easy to choose and why content standards are not too prescriptive about when it's appropriate to incorporate use. I first heard discussion in the DAX working group about including more format-driven item-level guidelines in the revision last year. It made me curious about how catalogers would work with the emerging standards and what it would be like to use companion standards with compatible rules across a variety of formats and hierarchies. Graphic Materials was published in 1982 by the Library of Congress Prints and Photographs Division. It's needed a few revisions since its initial publication, but issuing a second edition was postponed until new and revised standards like DAX, ICID, CCO, and DCRMB were complete, with the idea of working within those new frameworks whenever possible. We're still waiting to see what's going to come our way in terms of RDA. Revisions of DAX and G are following in similar footsteps to their predecessors, GM and APPM, which were published within 1 year of one another. Both GM and APPM were created to amplify the instruction provided in AACR2 for describing special materials. GM and APPM had some similarities, but there were differences in areas like title, date, and extent. Since then, Mark 21, format integration, the introduction of EAD, and other web-based tools changed structural requirements related to description, leading to the first publication of DAX as an update to APPM in 2004. The time also seemed right for a new edition of GM. So in November 2007, a group of visual materials catalogers submitted a proposal to the chair of the BSC to develop the second edition of GM as part of the DCRM suite of cataloging standards. The proposal was accepted, and an editorial team of 7 members formed, including several SAA members. They drafted several versions of G since then. I serve as the liaison between G and the DAX working group, aiding communication between the two revision efforts. To encourage broad communication, G set up a project wiki for anyone to log on, follow progress, review current and older versions, and make comments and suggestions. I'll also be providing the link to that wiki on my last slide. So in this photo, would the analogy be GM as the woman looking adoringly at the man with the cane that represents the GCRM suite while the DAX suitor is looking on? The objective of DCRM and G is to focus on meeting user needs to find, identify, select, and obtain materials. In order to do that, G provides specific guidance for describing a variety of visual still image formats, including photographic materials, prints, drawings, posters, cartoons, digital images, and other two-dimensional objects. It plans to include extensive examples of rule applications throughout each area, as well as in the appendices. You can make a contribution to this effort by submitting your own examples from your repositories to G via the wiki. Coming from the library community, the DCRM suite focuses on bibliographic description of published materials and special collections. When needed or useful, G extends those descriptive practices to include conventions that handle unpublished still images, collections, and other special situations. For example, G plans to include an appendix relating conventions specifically to collection-level description to simplify implementation at higher aggregations. However, the idea of G as a companion standard to DAX means the catalogers could create group-level descriptions using DAX and then switch to G for description at lower aggregations, particularly at the item level, if that's the best fit for their repository. Comparing the G draft with DAX shows differences in most areas, particularly in the format and placement of descriptive information, but none of them are earth-shattering. I'll briefly describe some of them, recognizing that time constraints in this session, as well as the fact that G and DAX remain in flux, limits what I can say about the details. Diane said a whole lot about the use of brackets and titles, so I won't go into a lot of detail here, but I will say that G emphasizes transcription from the chief source of information, and that works really well for published materials with related textual information. And that includes items as well as groups of materials like albums. G recommends descriptive practices to follow when devising titles for items and collections. DAX also provides instruction in creating supplied titles, especially for describing unpublished collections and groups, which are largely devoid of formal titles. DAX contains less detail related to supplying titles at the item level. Notes. Following DCRM practice, G does not require any notes in basic descriptions. DAX now requires three notes at the minimal level: scope and contents, conditions governing access, and language. As mentioned earlier, since many images do not have related words, the parameters of the language note may need review in the DAX revision. 3. Creator. Although quite similar in principle, G emphasizes the creator of the image, while DAX tends to focus more on the organization or entity named in the title as the primary creator, often the sponsor of the work. For example, you might see a main entry under U.S. Geological Survey rather than a photographer, Timothy O'Sullivan. Date. DAX places date information in the title area, considering part of the content of the work, while G puts it in the publication imprint area to stay in step with book cataloging practices and emphasize production and creation dates. Many images do not have a publication date, so catalogers often supply creation dates based on other information like content, format, or copyright date. What this means is that date information would be presented in two different areas when doing hierarchical description incorporating both DAX and GM. Last is physical characteristics. This refers to extent, format, and genre of the material. G provides a lot of instruction and examples describing physical qualities of the material, emphasizing quantity, format, information like technique or medium, and physical details related to color, mount, or container. G requires size as a basic element of description and also recommends the use of general and specific material designations. On the other hand, DAX typically records only the number of boxes or a space measurement like linear feet. It makes sense for DAX catalogers to incorporate physical descriptions from G when emphasizing image holdings, exercising the DAX recommendation to adopt practices from other standards as needed. So these are the five specific areas that DAX and G can try to think through together. Fundamentally, DAX and G are similar in their core data elements and commitment to providing basic description information. Here's a really simplified example about how it might look to create a collection-level description in DAX and an item-level description in G using the minimal elements. And I completely made up this this information just to illustrate some of the differences, but you can see how that applies, particularly in how date is listed, title, and extent. The hope is that each new standard is going to contain guidelines demonstrating recommendations for implementation of the companion standard so that it simplifies application. G version 3.2 is now posted to the wiki, with version 4.0 expected to be available by the end of the summer. The current timetable forecasts there will be several more versions and review periods over the next year or so, with an anticipated date of printing in early 2011. One goal we have is to offer workshops and discussion, maybe something like G for archivists or G for librarians, as an opportunity to discuss options for description and related implications. How successfully will new standards and revisions work together? I think it's reasonable to mix and match these conventions, but it might be challenging for catalogers to be well-informed about multiple standards, increasing conflicts instead of synchronicity. Unless carefully developed, the users that we most want to facilitate could be deterred by discordant patterns of description. Only time will tell, but I'm glad we've started the conversation and hope that it develops into a stable and sustainable long-term relationship. Thank you.
So, hi, I'm Andrea Lee, and I'm going to kind of just jump into this, but essentially the moving image and recorded sound communities are in the conceptual stages vis-a-vis using DAX for unpublished moving image and sound recordings, and many of us do realize that describing everything at the item level, which is our tradition, is not always practical nor desirable, especially in consideration of the amount of material that comes our way. Okay. So how we traditionally describe moving image and sound recordings, for the most part, the assumption is that the item in hand constitutes the work that has been published and distributed in multiple copies, and we traditionally describe at the item level following rules for bibliographic description, heavily oriented to AACR, where the body of the description is dependent on transcription from a chief source. We're going to see if this comes up or not. And it's not. So I had the video of the Marian Anderson Lincoln Memorial Concert, which is a minute and a half. But basically, the story is that Marian Anderson, who is an African-American contralto singer, was denied access to sing at Constitution Hall. This was a major event in civil rights history, and she was then allowed to sing at the Lincoln Memorial. There we go. So this is how we would describe the content of that particular item, which was really only a minute and a half newsreel story. And what we're really interested in is creating a surrogate record for the completed work, since moving images have traditionally been difficult to browse. Included here are the key entities that we would be interested in capturing in traditional item level description. And for preserving moving image archive, ideally detailed descriptions of each physical format, noting the number of reels, gauge and size, generation, and any condition information would be recorded. And so for this single story, which was the ninth story on this particular newsreel issue called News of the Day, from Volume 10, Issue 259. So the excerpt, the particular story, was called Nation's Capital Gets a Lesson in Tolerance. And so this would be the traditional title, publication, distribution information, version information, whatever credits you have, and you might want to put notes about where the footage was shot. And then you can do these long summary shot-by-shot description. This is material that's very difficult to find, and it isn't available in reference sources. And then we would provide all these access points for the performers, the cameraman, and the distributor, and the access points for topics and genres. This is a very long record for a 1.5-minute story. So it's like a finding aid itself. So moving images and recorded sound often do record a number of different events that are either unpublished or unique. We have public and private performances, natural disasters. We have a lot of home movies of possibly Hurricane Katrina, historical events of 9/11, home movie footage and professional footage actually of 9/11, Hindenburg disaster, and of course the Zapruder film of the Kennedy assassination. We have home movies of birthdays, holidays, parades, or other celebrations, and they also may be recorded on tape. We have auditions, rehearsals, behind-the-scenes footage associated with a play or a motion picture. We might have recordings of natural and ambient sounds, conversations and interviews. An artist may have a video series over a period of time. And then, of course, the edited compilations, rough or pre-broadcast edits, and raw footage and outtakes. So one of the issues that we struggle with is what constitutes a formal title with all of these different types of things. We do have, where do we get it from? Sometimes we have to get it from a label or a program, as was the case with An Evening with Carrie Fisher at the Charles Playhouse. And then we have things that, such as the Zapruder film, which is just how it's become known. Is that a formal title? And then we have things that we just have to describe kind of because we don't know what it is, like the ambient sounds of a rock music festival circa 1990. And without the context of the provenance information of this material, it makes it difficult from a user perspective to know what this is or to provide them with clues. What we get in DAX is, for item level, basically is to suggest using AACR2 to record these titles, but we are struggling with trying to provide guidelines of what constitutes a formal title as opposed to what is a supply title. So for the 1939 Easter Sunday concert at the Lincoln Memorial, it's kind of a named event, but doesn't have really a formal name that we can transcribe from something. But it does include a radio broadcast, which is actually the most complete record of the event. There are photographs, papers, records, and newsreel footage, and these are all spread across a number of archives. It's very common occurrence in both moving image and recorded sound archives that a collection will have either multiple provenance or be split among repositories based on format. It is also not uncommon to split records to highlight a particular event within a collection. The newsreel story of Anderson's concert, for instance, is part of UCLA's Hearst Metrotone News Collection, and the story is part of a larger newsreel issue. This is kind of a selected view of the finding aid for Marian Anderson's papers held at the Annenberg Rare Book and Manuscript Library at the University of Pennsylvania. And no mention is made in the abstract, actually, that the papers also do include recorded sound materials, photographs, and music manuscripts. And as I was looking through this and noticed the programs and publicity, there was one box that had January 1936 to April 9th, 1939. April 9th, of course, is the date of the Lincoln Memorial Concert. So that's where I probably would find it. Instead, for the collection of papers, a separation list is included informing researchers that the photographs, the sound recordings, and music manuscripts are described either as separate collections or at the item level. And this is quite a long list of material. One of the things that DAX does note is that besides the archival principles of provenance and original order, a general principle in DAX is that the rules of description apply to all archival materials, regardless of form or medium. In essence, no records are excluded from the description. And I suppose that separation list is part of the description. So we have to use some judgment there about what that means. So that's another issue that we're struggling with, and so we've come up with some very preliminary discussions on this. One idea was to actually create a series, like, for instance, if the link, the NBC radio broadcast and the newsreel coverage were part of the papers, which they actually aren't, we could create a series for performances to highlight these significant performances, because people are looking for these events and want material about the events. They don't care where it comes from. And so here we could do this performances and then create these sub-series for each one of these individual records. And we just don't know if this really breaks the rules of original order, since creators may intend to keep materials associated with an event together, but they may not, because it isn't practical to interfile films with papers in file folders. And this doesn't preclude also cataloging each resource at the item level using companion standards. In this case, the NBC radio broadcast would be used, AACR, and the Hearst Metrotone newsreel coverage actually was used using AACR. And linking to the digital surrogates when they exist from the finding aid. And nor does DAX prevent anyone from taking the event and creating a separate collection to bring all that material together. And this would be if the event was cataloged or described. You can tell I'm from a bibliographic description community here. So the event as a separate collection, but then what do you title it? And here we kind of took the who, what, when, and where to kind of really emphasize that this is Marian Anderson sings at Lincoln Memorial and when. And then you could provide, bring the materials together in this way and then create a related materials note. So we came up with, as we were going through some of this, come up with a number of questions. So essentially, how much of the event should be recreated in the Finding Aid, if at all? Do we include all the correspondence that was associated with the event before it even happened? The material, any material available in preparation for the event? Do we include the programs, any newspaper accounts, photographs? This could go on and on and on. And at what point does recreating event break with the principle of provenance and original order? UCLA Film and Television Archive, where I previously worked for about 10 years, did take extant moving image footage from the Hearst Metrotone News collection and did attempt to recreate the event, which was a bit controversial, using the footage, but using the NBC radio broadcast sort of as a outline about what to put in the documentary. And then how practical is it to describe and arrange material based on events in an era of more product, less processing? So the ARS community, the recorded sound community, has created a subcommittee called DAX for Archival Sound Recordings Subcommittee. It formed last year to prepare online guidelines on the application of DAX to description of archival sound recordings, realizing the need for the establishment of such guidelines for unpublished sound recordings, since AACR 2, Chapter 6 are rules grounded in bibliographic tradition. Marcia McGuire, my colleague at the Library of Congress in the Recorded Sound Division Unit, actually, is the chair of that committee, and if you're interested in working with her on that through ARS, that is her email address. There isn't a formal subcommittee that has been established in AMIA. I'm kind of it at the moment. I have been in some informal discussions with some of my colleagues in that community to try to come up with some of the commonalities we have with the recorded sound community. So we'll probably be following what guidelines the recorded sound community is working on and provide comments and address it in that way. And that's it. And that's my contact information.
So we do have about 10 minutes for questions, and I'll just you know, reiterate that, you know, we see a wide range of approaches represented here, from, you know, taking existing standards and upgrading them in the framework of an existing of RBMS and the Bibliographic Standards Committee, to the, you know, to the recorded sound and moving image community that's sort of grappling with DAX. And, you know, this is one of the strengths that I think DAX has, is that it does sort of separate the bulk of what archivists do at the aggregate level from decisions that individual repositories may or may not make at the item level, and allows communities to sort of define best practices at the item level for themselves. So with that, I'll open it up to questions. Anyone? Well, so the question was that the person who asked the question's understanding was that the Custard Project really broke apart over this decision about items. As somebody who was on the Custard Project, it wasn't just items. But I guess what I would say, and the decision that we made in the United States, I mean, one of the sort of background issue there is that the Canadians have a very robust standards development and maintenance process in the archival community that actually has been funded by their national archives. We don't have that in the United States. So having a really detailed item level standard and trying to keep it up to address the community needs, there wasn't an infrastructure to support that. And we kind of knew that going in. But the realization was that, you know, you're not going to find grant funding agencies to constantly give SAA money to do standards. So in some ways, I think it was a practical decision. But in other ways, I think that, you know, it's a good decision, because as both Marcy and Diane pointed out, and Andrea as well, archivists aren't the only one who describe things at the item level. And so there are people in the bibliographic community who aren't archivists who have to deal with describing graphic materials, recorded sound, manuscripts, and taking the item level out of the archival community, and archivists don't really have a strong tradition of item-level work anyway. It's not like there are archival ways to approach that necessarily. So taking it out allows archivists and people from other communities to sort of have a dialogue and develop a standard that can be used both for single-item cataloging in a MARC framework, but could also be used in a multi-level finding aid if you need to do item-level description. You can sort of, you know, use those standards as a companion with DAX in a multi-level description structure. So hopefully that answers your question. Any other questions? Mary. So Mary's question is, for the standards that are being developed in a bibliographic framework, could our presenters comment on their prognostications about the impact of RDA?
I think we have to weigh that out. Certainly, we don't know to what extent RDA is actually going to be implemented and how long. I mean, I don't know when that's going to come. So we can't wait for RDA. We just kind of have to move forward and work through these issues and then see what happens.
Just speaking in terms of, as you know, probably know, Mary, the DCRM BSC specifically decided that RDA was not going to be a consideration in the development of the DCRM standards. So we have been asked not to consider RDA at this point. Of course, that's kind of like not considering that black cat sitting over there on the corner. You can't think about description and not think about RDA, but we have not incorporated that into our decision-making process at this point.
As far as DCRMG, from what I understand sitting in on the discussions from the G editorial membership, is that the focus has been so much on really working as a tight companion with DCRMB that it's sort of following in lockstep with that same decision.
Susan. So the question, I guess, for Andrea is really to talk about the Marian Anderson concert specifically in terms of FERBER and RDA. Those of you who aren't familiar with FERBER, it's the requirements for bibliographic records.
Yes.
And I emphasize the bibliographic.
And it is, yes, Mary Anderson does fit into that framework quite well, actually, because you do have a work and it's expressed as a moving image and it's manifested in a number of physical items. So, yes, it does work in the context of that framework. My experience with looking at RDA for moving images is that because you don't sort of have any specific instructions on how to deal with moving images, since it's kind of integrated and brought into all the book material, it's very difficult to kind of parse out some of that data, especially for titling things is really a problem. And titles are incredibly important for moving image materials, because how do we recognize or how do we deal with a work in the moving image with moving images? Title and date of the title and date, not from creator. So that's really something that RDA is not really terrific at. It's oriented from the concept that a work always must have a creator.
Anyone else? And just as a general comment about RDA in closing, because we only have a couple minutes left, I mean, I think that's something that, from the DAX working group perspective and from the community of archivists, RDA is, I mean, first of all, it's going to have to settle into the bibliographic community, and we don't want to, like, charge in and peg all of our standards to a standard that isn't clear at this point if it's going to be adopted by the bibliographic community. So that needs to percolate out. But RDA is based on FERBER, and I want to remind everybody that the B in FERBER does stand for bibliographic. So it's not... It's a reinvention of AACR2 to incorporate this work instance relationship that you see in a lot of published materials, but is very, very vaguely relevant to what we do in the archival world. And when it is relevant, is only relevant if we're doing description at the item level, because, you know, collections, records, personal papers, whatever we call them, series, are organic accumulations and they're unique. So so I think we are going to have to grapple as an archival community when RDA is out, that, you know, is actually published at the end of this year, about how much it's useful to us. I mean, it may, there are going to be, there are chapters in RDA on, you know, formulating names and things like that that have nothing to do with that work instance relationship that may be useful to us, but you know, it just remains to be seen. So for those of you who are interested in that, look forward to opportunities to discuss this within the description section, you know, sessions, other things at future SAA conferences. Susan, one more. So Susan's comment is just that, is the, you know, with the overarching concern of user access, expressing a concern about how these standards working in companionship play well together. And I guess the only thing that I can say about that is we all have different communities of users because they're not a monolithic thing. And the critical thing there is, you know, good and consistent use of standards in your repository and having a conversation with your specific users to make sure that what you're doing actually, you know, actually works for them. So with that, thank you all for coming, and a round of applause for our speakers.